Welcome once again, dear listeners, to another episode of Aeronauts. My name is Eldrick, and again, together with me, is Boss and Vincent. The title of today's episode is about Boeing. So guys, how's everyone doing?
Okay, it's been a little bit crazy week, and yes, I finally managed to see you in your uniform today, so congratulations, it was exciting. Just working back to back, and yeah, nothing much on my end.
Same old for me.
How about you, Aldrich?
For me, as I said, like, I just started my new job. It's quite interesting and something different, but I'll do it just for now until hopefully the aviation industry will recover soon. Mm-hmm. And so what do you think about my uniform today?
I find it
sexy.
What?
He answered it, not me. He answered it, not me.
Yeah, that's the basic uniform, that's about it.
It's a uniform, it looks good. So, yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Right. So, like, the earmuffs, you had to buy it, or what, they give it to you, like, what?
The earmuffs, they give us.
Okay.
Okay, guys, as we have did for last week's episode, that is Airbus, for this week, we're gonna be focusing more on Boeing and how they go on about the aircraft manufacturing, and with together with their popular 737 fleet and 777 as one of their most popular fleet in for the airlines. Okay, so Ross, what do you think? What do you know about Boeing?
I honestly think Boeing is one of the pioneers who actually introduced the wide body into the world. So, I mean, that's the closest I could think of at this instant moment. Whenever people say Boeing, I think wide body is the first thing they introduce. That's the first thing. Or 747s for that matter.
Okay.
Let me help you answer. What is Boeing? Boeing is the world's largest aerospace company, leading manufacturer of commercial jet airliners. So they are America's biggest manufacturing exporter, and the company supports airlines and US and allied government customers in more than 150 countries. So yeah, Boeing actually not only produce commercial planes, they also produce military aircraft. At the same time, satellites, weapons, defensive systems, launch systems, and also advanced information communication systems. Yep, so like you have said, Boeing is the premier manufacturer of commercial jetliners for decades. And also today, they have plenty of fleets that is going all around the world.
You do know Boeing actually has their own airline, right?
Yeah, it's called United Airlines.
Yes, it's actually United Airlines. Yeah. So, yeah, yep. I mean, like, as what mentioned earlier by Vincent, yeah, it's one of the leading companies in the world. They actually joint ventured, actually was merged with McDonnell Douglas, and, you know, they're one of the first pioneers.
Okay, yeah, guys, but I heard from somewhere that some media says that Airbus are also one of the pioneers in aircraft manufacturing, but I would say Boeing is the most pioneer one because they are the ones who started early during the early 19th century. So, not Airbus. I think they just started late 90s. So, I don't know how did they get the information for Airbus being the pioneer.
Boeing actually did launch their company somewhere around the 1916. Yeah, about a few years after the Wright brothers actually introduced flying. So yeah, and then they actually launched it officially as a Boeing airplane company in 1917 to 1961. So Airbus actually came in around 1961. So I mean, their first aircraft was actually a wide-body aircraft, whereby in Boeing, they started from a narrow, and then they gradually grew, and, you know, that sense.
Yeah, yeah, because I know that during the early 19th century, the time, they produced a 707, I think. That is where John Travolta flew that model. And it's still one of the coolest aircraft in that time. Okay, so anything else, Vincent?
Yeah, I mean, more to add on, Boeing actually claimed that they have more than 10,000 built commercial jetliners that are currently in service around the world, which accumulates up to almost half of the world fleet. And they also actually have a complete family of freighters, and they say that about 90% of the world's cargo is carried on board Boeing airplanes. Yeah, so that's about it.
Oh, okay. Okay, so moving on. So how and when did Boeing start?
As mentioned earlier by your boss, you said it started in 1916. The founder, William E. Boeing, was the one who actually founded. And from then on, in 1917, the Boeing Airplane Company was then actually renamed as a Boeing Airplane Company. Yeah. Then it goes on up to 1960, as mentioned by boss, where later on in 1995, Boeing partnered with a couple of nations like Russia, Ukraine, you know, to create a supply. And it provides commercial launch services, sending satellites to geostationary orbit. So basically sending it up to space. Yeah, so there's a little bit of history of how Boeing started.
Yeah, they started very humble beginnings, and they opened an airline, and yeah, that's how it is.
Okay, so actually, Boeing also manufactures their own fighter jets, and also, I think, during the early 19s, they merged with McDonnell Douglas, and then with the F-15, they took the F-15 design make it add on some new technologies onto it, so it became a Boeing F-15, and then the F-18 as well. So that's when they started all the military aircraft from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. So guys, what's the difference between the 777, 787, 737, and the 747 fleet variant? Like, example, is it a wide body, narrow body? How many engines do they have? Or any differences like winglets and engine nacelles?
Actually, there are really big differences. Like the 747, yeah. Actually, other than the 74, I mean, other than 737, all of the other aircraft that it describes are all wide bodies. The 737 is the only one that is narrow, and similarly, other than the 747, all the other aircrafts have two engines. Only the 747 has four. Yeah. Vincent, would you like to add some?
Nope.
Okay, if that's the case, yeah. So, the 777 has a GE90 engine for the 900X series, and for the 787, we have a Rolls-Royce Trent. They have a Rolls-Royce Trent 1000, and they also have an engine for General Electric GENX powered engines. So that is one. And the 737 has a LEAP engine. And the 747 is strictly General Electric NX engine. Yeah. So there you have it. And when it comes to rake wing tips, winglets, scimitar, winglets. Okay, winglets specifically is found on the 737
NG, the current generation, but since we are talking strictly about all the modern aircrafts, we have SIMTA type of winglets, so it reduces drag. And for the 747, the 777, as well as the 787, we have a raked wingtip. So it gives you a much more quieter flight and similarly also a good fuel efficiency, right? So that is so far how much I can explain about these things.
But according to Boeing, the first design, scimitar winglet design on their 77 MAX, they say that it's the most efficient winglet to date because it produces more efficiency for short range to medium range sectors, as in improving better climb performance, and I think the performance of the takeoff performance part, and it reduces induced drag as well. So in terms of that, the company saves more money in fuel savings. And then about the engine nacelles as well, 77 and the 787, they have the similar engine nacelle. They call it the chevrons, where it also saves, saves fuel, but reduces noise
impact. Actually, noise. Also the 747s also have them, the chevron nacelles.
Oh, yeah, the 747-8.
Yeah, since you're talking about all modern, so yeah, other than the 777-900s, we also have, all the aircrafts have the nacelles in the back. Chevron nacelles.
Mm. And then also, there's a new addition to the modern 787s and the 777. One is the HUD, that's a heads up display. And what do you think? Does it improve enhanced safety or awareness for the pilots?
Personally speaking, it gives better safety margin because you see it at the same time. You can also see your runway when you're you're literally seeing two things at once. So I think it's one of a good features, and it gives better safety performance, I guess. How about you, Vincent? What's your take on this?
I mean, with the heads-up display, it's all right in front of you, so you don't have to, unlike right now, you got to sometimes, look left, look right a bit.
Whereas,
with the heads-up display, everything is right in front of you. So, it makes things easier, although it may take some time to get used to it. But other than that, That's my opinion. That's what I thought.
Yeah, very, very true. Because I think they took this idea from fighter jets about a long time ago, because it gives more situational awareness by having more situational on the outside of the aircraft and outside environment during the critical phases of flight.
So basically, it's like, if some of them that just cannot imagine what the heads-up display is. It's basically if those who play, Ace Combat, basically it's like that, right?
Yeah.
The display is more or less plus minus around similarity is there.
Actually, to give better understanding, if those of y'all who actually seen Iron Man, in his Iron Man suit, he's actually flying and then he can see all the information right in his eyes, kind of thing. So it's similar to that, I guess.
Iron Man has a facial recognition.
It's
similar in the sense where all the information he needs is already at his eyes, so he doesn't need to move his head or neck to find out information, in other words.
Yeah, correct.
So in that sense, I'm saying that, but I'm not telling that it is exactly like how Iron Man's, the suit is, but it's just all the details are right in your eyes, in other words. You don't need to move your eyes a lot. Or move your head.
Say it's not in your eyes. I mean, it's eye level.
Yeah, it's in your eye level. Yeah, that's the better term. It's at eye level.
I mean, basically, it projects all the basic information as like in the primary flight display onto that heads-up display where you see your altitude, heading, airspeed, mostly all those basic information that you get.
So, and at the same time, see the runway or see your vision. You have visual outside of your cockpit.
Yeah, so that during the critical phases of flight, example landing, you just have to look outside. You don't have to look, keep on looking inside, outside, looking inside, outside. So sometimes you lose your visual awareness with the outside environment. So it's a better tool for the newer versions of the aircraft.
To explain the situation for with HUD and without a HUD is like reading subtitles and seeing a foreign movie.
Yeah.
You'll be seeing the subtitles down and then you'll be looking
down
and looking up. So similarly, like we pilots, we do is we see our instruments, we glance, and then we look up to see the runway so we know where we go. And we do that so fast that it has become like second nature for us. So yeah, a HUD would actually minimize that, you know, that constant look up, look down, look down, look up, look down kind of thing. So yeah, that's sort of one way to describe how we actually like, because aircrafts are fast and we are trying to minimize as much errors. So those HUDs actually just assist.
But it takes us time to get used to it because we're used to
have a different
scanning technique. Yeah, the scanning technique is different. So now we have to have a new habit or a new way to scan the instruments.
But the flaw, yeah, like what you said, I would agree, is that it will not to say it'll take time for you to get used to. It will sort of it will disrupt your scanning technique in a sense where, because if I'm not mistaken, the HUD actually gives you only the speed, your height, your rate of descent, your artificial horizon where, you know, the sky meets the soil, meets the ground. It will not, and also it will give you a very basic direction. Whereby, okay, like actual scanning, you need to put, you know, you must ensure that you're on a glide slope, you need to ensure you're on a localizer, you need to ensure, like, you know, you are on the, you know, you're, in that sense, you're scanning, and then you have to check the engine at all. Because your parameters, for your engines, you actually have to look down in your panel. You can't look at your HUD, right? So in that sense, it'll take some time to get used to, but at the same time, you will tend to lose a little bit of your glancing technique, your scanning technique.
Are you sure? Yeah. Because if I'm not mistaken, if Audric sees a girl, his glancing technique is 100% effective. No, he looks up, down, left, right, everywhere, bro.
I reserve my comment.
Okay, so yeah, I think that's about it for that part. And moving on to the next question.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, if we touch about the 777X wingtips, folding wingtips.
I haven't actually touched about that, actually.
Oh yeah, that's something to marvel about, because it's a new feature on the latest wide-body 777X. Where the wings fold and unfold to minimize space in the airport, because when the wings extend, it will be too long for the airport environment, so capabilities as well. So while the wings can unfold, then it will save space, then they can still meet the airport requirements for the wings aspect ratio. Wingspan for them.
When you said that it can expand and retract, so how does it work when the aircraft land, then it automatically, you know, retracts, or you have to actually press a button or toggle to actually retract the thing?
The question is directed to?
I mean, I'm just throwing it out there.
Oh, okay. There's a switch. You apparently, from what I understand, is there's a checklist that you have to turn the wings on. That means you're extending the wings only when you're on the runway, and when you're exiting it, you have to switch it off where you are retracting the wingtip.
So it's actually kind of dangerous in a way. So if you know, suddenly you take off without the, you know, with the wingtip retracted. I mean the checklist.
I would agree, but as what you mentioned, Swiss cheese model, yeah, it would be it could be a danger, yes. But to be honest, this wingtips, not to say wingtip folding, the wing folding for the 777 is not to say something new. It's only new in a sense where it has actually been materialized. It was actually planned to be introduced in the 777-300 series or the 200 series, actually. But not towards the end of the wing, but it's more towards the mid of the wing. It's just sort of like a fun fact, actually. Yeah. Yeah, but in reality, it was actually discussed. They actually planned to do it on the 777-200, the previous, the old generation of 777s. But then it wasn't practical because when they do it, you know, the fuel will come out and, you know, the proper... So they found it like quite a mess and hassle.
Yep.
So that is why they decided to, you know, reject it. And then when it came to the latest 777 series, the new generation ones, they decided to actually try it because in order to counter the weight, they need to have the sufficient lift from the wing. So hence why they actually introduced that, and to also save space. And by shortening the wings, they actually, because Boeing defines their aircrafts according, whether it's a heavy or a medium, according to their wings, actually. Actually, that's what I understand when I read earlier. So if your wings are much more longer, then you become a different category. And if Yes. So if your wings are much more wider, it's a different category. If it's shorter, it's another category. That is why aircrafts, they do not... Certain aircrafts doesn't need a wing tip. Certain aircraft doesn't need a winglet. And certain wings doesn't need a wing... you know, like just like we mentioned, it was a raking wing and all those things, because somehow the width of the wing plays a role on what category do you actually become.
So, but actually, like what you said is now, like Vincent said, it's a safety hazard, is it? Because the wingtip, if let's say they don't extend it for takeoff, then it's going to be a safety hazard, right? So, but actually, I think Boeing had implemented a safeguard if this happens. So, if they don't extend the wingtips, then they will have a alarm to the pilot, or a warning or something.
Yeah, there is an alarm. Yes,
I mean, like an alert, right? Oral alert.
Mm. Like the flaps in the 73. I think they say if you don't extend the flap for takeoff, then they said flaps or something like that, I think.
For the 7.3, it's more like if the takeoff configuration is not right, then there will be an oral alert before you engage. You'll be able to take off.
Yeah. Just to say about the wingtips again. So according to Simply Flying, they mentioned that why does the 777 have no winglets? One reason that the 777, I quote, one reason the 777 does not feature such wingtip extensions in the operational limits would be in place of the aircraft. So the 777-200LRs and the 300ER variants of the aircrafts have a wingspan about 64.8 meters. So this just only falls below the upper limit of ICAO's aerodrome's code E. So now if you extend the wing much more longer, it drops to it will come under classified aerodrome code F. So normally it'll be if you're in aerodrome F, you're normally similar to a 380 or a 747 limit. So that is why they actually do not include such winglets and you know, that sense.
Yeah. Okay. So, but there's another advancement in technology for the Dreamliners, the 787 Dreamliner, where their wings can, I think the ailerons or wing surfaces can adjust to the wing loading in the air. Like example in turbulence, the wings curve or move in a way so that it will dampen the turbulent effect and thereby reduce. The comfort will be improved for the passengers. Is it true? Yeah. So I just heard about it, 787 wings.
It makes some sort of practical sense. I mean, most of the aircrafts, I mean, we come from a time where aircraft wings are much more stronger compared to the cabin. And when having flown classic aircrafts, when we enter a turbulence, the whole cabin shakes. So I think to create comfort, it makes probably a bit more sense. With current technologies, they can actually improve the quality of the wing to be strong and also flexible. So, yeah.
Okay, so moving on to the next question. Okay. We have discussed about the max in one of our previous episodes. So, now we are just gonna discuss a little on the status of the max lately for now, I mean, and in present. So, are the max still flying or are they like still having some technical issues that they have to go, they have to sort out?
For the max status, currently it's actively flying on the air, currently around the US, Brazil, Canada, Australia, and also the UK, these regions. Whereas in China, China is still prohibiting the aircraft from flying. And they have never indicated when it will actually be back on the air. So, you know, before the 73 MAX were to be released back onto service, what Boeing has done, that they claim that they, based on their recent publication, so what they've done is enhance the flight control computer software, so basically update software. And another one was to provide modification, greater separation and wiring. So they rewired and made some wired the wiring better to satisfy also the regulator's requirement. So once the airplane is done, next they actually enhanced training for the crews. So airlines also will receive a regulatory approval based on the training programs that is made or set by Boeing itself. And also that another requirement is that all these pilots have to complete the training that is set by Boeing to actually be able to, you know, be back in the MAX and fly the MAX. So these are the things that, you know, this is the current status of the 73 MAX.
Yeah, I agree with what Vincent said.
Yeah, so actually about the part where China still hasn't started flying the MAXs, is because I think one of it is because of political issues. I don't know, between US and China. So that is one of the reasons. And then I think they have their own airline aircraft coming up. Is it the Glomac, is it? I think
Comet.
Yeah. So they're trying to get it certified, with their own Chinese authority. I think so. Yeah. So now they're just leaving the MAX grounded. Yeah. Then other than that, it's just like what Vincent said. They have to go through some vigorous training, especially on their MCAS system and the defenses before they start flying the MAXs again. Yeah. So guys, which direction is Boeing heading in the future?
Based on recent articles and based on what Boeing have released, a couple of statements, if I'm not mistaken, They're planning to actually debut 100% of biofuel planes by 2030. You know, currently, what they've actually claimed that with existing current technologies under current regulation, they can only use biofuel blends of up to 50%. Whereas like I've mentioned, they're planning for 2030 to be 100%. And also, they say that with biofuel, you can actually halve the emissions by 2050. With biofuel, it can help in reducing a lot of emission. And the same goes like Airbus we mentioned last week. So in the statement that was released, I think somewhere late last year, if I'm mistaken, Boeing actually said that changes will need to happen across the fields of jet system engineering and global regulation for new innovation vision to be realized. So, yeah, they emphasize on a lot of, they claim that, there's no jet that is capable of being fueled by 100% biofuel. And also, there are no jet that is also large enough to support commercial aircraft. And at the same time, to be cost competitive with traditional system. So, as of now, international regulation permits blends of up to 50% biofuel. So with this 100% biofuel, they claim all these things would happen in the new future. So we have to basically wait and see in 10 years time. And they have completed one trial run. They have did one trial run on a commercial flight using 100% biofuel. Basically, it happened in 2018 while using a FedEx 777 fighter. So basically, it's like a pet project where they've tried, and I've never seen the result, so I don't know what was the result, what was the end result for that. Yeah, so that's it. Yeah, going green, and next aiming to go reducing emission by another 20 years or so.
I mean, it makes a little bit sense. I mean, practically, fuel is going to deplete in another 50 to 100 years' time. So we need alternatives to, as they say, keep life going. So flying without, moving around without any biofuel. So you have to find alternatives at this moment. So this is the best we could do. So
yeah, so it's either hydrogen or biofuel.
Yeah, it's either hydrogen, water, or biofuel, which is, all the cooking oil that we actually have. Okay, anyways, so a small little fun fact, similar to how Airbus had its funny numbering set X and Ys and Zs at the back, Boeing's also have them, actually. For example, in Malaysia Airlines, for example, they actually have 747-4H6. And then if you notice, Singapore Airlines, they actually have 747-412. So the reasons they actually have different codes and different codes for each airline is to represent the customers who are ordering the particular airframe. So it's like if you're ordering from British Airways, it'll normally come as 436, if I'm not mistaken. And for KLM, is about 406. So they go according to those codings, actually is restricted specifically for the particular airline. So that is why sometimes you'll see this particular aircraft having a different coding in the back. So just one of those fun facts for your information. And maybe if Vincent would like to fill in detail, feel free.
But if you're saying you're mentioning H46, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So what if, because between airlines, they normally lease aircraft, they sell aircraft. Mm-hmm. So what happens to that number?
They still retain it. They still maintain it. They do not change it because that aircraft is made for that particular airline. That's in that sense.
Right, but when that airline sells it off to another airline, it technically belongs to the other new airline, right?
But it will still maintain. What I'm trying to say is, it will follow the first owner of the first owner of the airline. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
So yeah. It's based on the first. I mean,
buyer.
Yeah, the first buyer, right?
Yes. So yeah, that's a little fun fact that I would like to add in.
No, just asking.
No worries. So and we all know, if I'm not mistaken, also Boeing was the first airline. First company to actually introduce wide bodies. The reason they actually brought wide body was because of Pan Am pressuring Boeing to actually have a larger aircraft. So you know. They go back and forth, at the end of the day, they created the 747s, from the 100 series, the 200s, 300s, 400s, now they stopped the 800s already.
Yeah. So then the Boeing and Airbus, they have two different types of ways they can go into the future. Because Airbus, like we talked about the last episode, they have three prototypes of aircraft, right? They're experimenting. And then while Boeing, they are doing new types of fuel, biofuel and all that. Yeah, so anyway, just gonna see what's gonna happen in the future in another 10-20 years time.
Yeah.
Thank you once again, dear listeners, for tuning to our podcast, Aeronauts. For the latest news and updates, please follow us on our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at Aeronauts. AER0NUTS. I repeat, AER0NUTS. And give us a follow, like, and share on our social media platform. And your feedback is greatly appreciated as we progress our journey together. Thank you once again, guys. That's all. And for the next week's episode, we will be talking about the aircraft manufacturer Comet and about turboprops. Thank you all guys, and see you guys on the next episode.